Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The majority of Texans support vaccines. Vaccines stop the spread of diseases and they save lives. But a vocal minority is actively working on weakening or dismantling vaccine requirements in Texas. There has been a 95% decrease in vaccine-preventable diseases in the last 50 years. But these diseases are coming back. The gains in public health because of widespread immunizations are being threatened by the rise and spread of disinformation about the benefits of vaccinations. And we can also see this in the Texas legislature. The Immunization Partnership, a statewide nonprofit that works to improve the rate of routine immunizations in Texas, is hosting a public health summit in San Antonio this week called The Intersection to address some of the biggest challenges we have in Texas. And we're joined by Terry Burke, the executive director of the Immunization Partnership, and Rekha Lakshmanan, the chief policy strategist for the Immunization Partnership. Welcome, both of y'all.
Thank you, David. We're delighted to be with you.
So, Terry, describe what is happening with the erosion that we have in public trust in vaccinations.
Well, the erosion of public trust is precisely that. I think we've always had an anti-vaccine movement that was going on long before COVID, but it was a much smaller group of folks. And then when COVID hit, we saw a lot of spillover into other vaccines. And it's, you know, a million reasons. I mean, but the most important are a lack of trust in government, a lack of trust in institutions. Communications haven't always been as clear as perhaps they could be. And then you have, you know, this whole atmosphere of social media that everybody can post anything they want and people can elect to believe it, but it is largely rooted in their mistrust of institutions.
But Terry, you know, as I said just now, the majority of Texans support vaccines. How is it that a minority view, which is not based in science, is able to wield so much power and be able to get vaccination requirements weakened or dismantled in the state of Texas?
Well, like so many other issues in Texas, it really comes back to who votes. And unfortunately, we're a state with very low voter turnout. So the people who vote are the folks who come across as the majority, but they're not. But they're just a very loud minority. And politicians think they have to respond to that group. The secret, I believe, is for those of us, the majority of us who believe in vaccines, have got to get active, have got to get engaged, got to get involved. Go see legislators in their home districts and their district offices and let them know, let them see in their community that there is widespread support for vaccines.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You could text us at that number as well, 833-877-8255. Got a question or a comment about the erosion of public trust in vaccinations, dismantling of the requirements for vaccinations by our legislature. I'd love to hear from you. Rekha, so there's a virus. Does it check my voter registration card to see if I'm a Republican or Democrat before it comes knocking on my door?
I don't believe so. I mean, you know, vaccines is an agnostic issue. You know, we have Republicans supporting vaccines and we have Democrats supporting vaccines and independents supporting vaccines. So, you know, what we're trying to do is, you know, we don't want the issue to be politicized. And unfortunately, it has been politicized. But at the end of the day, you know, vaccines, you know, has no boundaries. I mean, we can all be affected by vaccine preventable diseases. And so, you know, as Terry said, we need to make sure that people who do support vaccines are sharing their positions and their beliefs with lawmakers.
Well, I went to the website for Texans for Vaccine Choice just to see, you know, what their thought process is, what they're all about. And they have politicized it. They're celebrating all of the candidates that have signed their Vaccine Choice pledge, and we'll get more into that, including here in San Antonio, Alamo Heights, with Mark LaHood. They're celebrating him as one of their own, and also Ted Cruz. But this isn't. Is this an issue that voters think about when they go vote, or are they really thinking about, like, you know, the price of gasoline, Rika?
I mean, I think there are, you know, a number of issues that are on top of, you know, voters' minds. And, you know, from a vaccine standpoint, I really don't think that is, you know, a primary driver of what is going to, you know, make those individuals decide on which candidates they want to vote for. So I think it's been inflated and conflated. But as we've seen over the past few years, you know, the distrust in institutions and the government, as Terry said, you know, we really have to see and kind of put that on top of the list. You know, we're moving towards this, you know, anti-science beliefs, and policies made on behalf of all of us are being decided at the legislature, and they're not being decided always on the correct and factual information. And so, you know, we as voters really need to pay attention to what our lawmakers are doing and how they're making those decisions, because it can affect, and it will affect, millions of lives.
And so, Terry, can you amend that? Tell us, you know, should voters be thinking about, does my candidate support vaccinations?
Let me expand on that. I think what you will find is that the people, the lawmakers who have signed the pledge to water down our vaccine requirements, et cetera, are lawmakers who have also signed pledges on a number of other social issues, you might say cultural issues. And so what happens, I think, is the voters look at that whole package and say, oh, this elected person, this person running for elective office, represents all of my views. So it's not necessarily, as Rekha says, it's not necessarily vaccine, that's not the one issue. It's not I don't think we have single issue vaccine voters, but I do think you'll find that there's a whole package of issues that vaccine are included in, and those are the folks that get the votes. It's why we're calling our conference here in San Antonio the Intersection, is a recognition that there are so many factors that affect health, that affect good health and healthy communities. We believe, of course, that vaccines is a really good starting place, but there are all these issues that affect good health, and many of them are involved, come up in legislative policy discussions. So we want to put together a group that can think about these in a collaborative, collective way.
All right, let's go take a break. I got Carol on the board. Carol, I'll get you on the air right after this quick break, and our phone lines are open. We want to hear from everybody. Call in, tell us what you think about vaccinations. Science tells us, and we know it from our own experience, they save lives. They improve public health. Vaccine requirements are a good thing, but it's being watered down in the Texas legislature, and evidence shows that it's making us less safe. The number to call in is 833-877-8255. 833-TPR-TALK. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from Jingu House in the Japanese Tea Garden, featuring Asian cuisine with a San Antonio twist. Open for lunch 7 days a week. View the menu at jinguhousesatx.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about vaccinations and a organized, funded effort in order to spread disinformation about vaccinations and about weakening requirements for vaccinations in Texas. The number to call in is 833-877-8255. Let's go to Carol on the phones. And Carol, you're on the air.
Okay, can you hear me?
Yeah, you sound good.
Hi. So I'll start out by saying I'm strongly supportive of vaccination for myself and for my entire family. But my concern is, I guess I'll pose a question and then a statement. My question is anybody monitoring the vaccination rate of the huge number of immigrants that have recently come into our country? Specifically, if we just focus on school-age children, that's my question. My statement is, while most people are very supportive to vaccination programs, it's so blatant that the millions of people who've just recently entered our country have come from countries where the vaccination rate is extremely low. El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, the average rate of vaccinations there is very, very, very low.
Okay. Carol, thank you for that question. Let's go ahead and fact check that. Terry Burke, Executive Director of the Immunization Partnership.
So I don't know that I can point to some site where you can see what the rates of immunization are for new immigrants. I can tell you anecdotally, I have spoken to a number of public health departments, particularly in South Texas, who tell me that the immigrants who are arriving are lining up at the public health department as soon as they get there to get vaccinations. That's one. Two, you mentioned school-age children. They cannot legally go into a public school. No one, not your children, not someone else's children from another country, can get enrolled in a public school without producing a vaccination record. And so I just had a call with a school nurse last week from this area, district school nurse, who told me that the folks who are showing up at their schools, immigrants who are showing up at their schools, are coming with vaccine records, either from their home country or they have gone to a public health department here. But I don't know. I don't have any ability to tell you what the rate is.
I can tell you the fact that the people who come from countries in Central America, even if they come from Venezuela, Mexico, they are coming at it. Those countries have a much higher rate of vaccinations than we have here in the United States, because these are countries that have a national medical program. And these countries, they know that by administering vaccines to children, that they are able to prevent the spread of diseases. And so it is a much higher rate than we have in the United States. And it's ended in this myth that they're coming across and they're not vaccinated and they're bringing diseases with them is totally untrue. And it is just another untruth that is being spread about the migrants who are coming at the southern border. But I want to go on to a thing you brought up, Terry, was about public school nurses. During COVID, we lost so many public school nurses. There was such a demand for nurses. They could make so much money getting back into, and schools were shut down. And many of them have not come back to the public school. And public school funding is not there, really, for the nurses. So we've lost our public school nurses quite a bit. How is that impacting doing the job of making sure kids are vaccinated and other things, that, you know, checking them? In Texas, we have a program screening kids for diabetes. It's the only state that does that. But and that all that's falling behind as well. So, Terry, can you talk about that?
Well, I think the problem I hear from school nurses, not only about the drain on their psyche, if you will, and their burnout, is whether the difference becomes whether their administration supports their effort to enforce these vaccine requirements. And the nurse I spoke with last week, her administration supports her. But I have spoken to others who say, you know, the way Texas schools are funded is based on children, how many little children are sitting in a chair in a classroom. So superintendents and others in a financial squeeze don't want to turn away anybody from their schools that they could get funding for. And this has really exacerbated the efforts of most school nurses and frustrates them. And like you say, I mean, they have many alternatives to being a school nurse.
Rekha Lakshminana, the Chief Policy Strategist for the Immunization Partnership. Is the legislature, you know, what are they dealing with? What kind of bills are being floated, and how does that weaken the requirements for vaccinations?
Well, you know, last year we were in a legislative session, or we were in multiple legislative sessions, and across the regular plus the special sessions, we saw over 50 vaccine-related bills filed by lawmakers. The vast majority of them were what I would call anti-vaccine legislation. So, you know, we've seen proposals to weaken current school immunization requirements. We saw bills proposed to shift the decision-making of school vaccine requirements away from the epidemiologists and the public health experts over at the state health department, and put those into the hands of lawmakers who, may not necessarily have that public health and science background. You know, we've seen legislation filed that would essentially say, even simply, and I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, simply by educating the public about vaccines, that could be perceived as coerciveness. I've been doing this for quite some time, and in 2023, that year was the most vaccine bills filed collectively in one legislative session versus, the previous 10 years. So, this is what is coming before lawmakers. Unfortunately, a lot of that is being driven, those bills being filed are being driven based on misinformation and disinformation.
So when a child shows up in Texas to go to kindergarten, they can avoid being vaccinated because they can present an exemption for reasons of conscience, including religious beliefs. So what does that mean? I mean, is that basically, anyone who wants to not be vaccinated can just not be vaccinated, Terry?
That's what it means. I like to say that, it's a religious exemption, conscientious objections, and it's 2 o'clock on Thursday afternoon, so I don't want to have my kid vaccinated. I mean, it's a very easy process. Right now, you do have to go to the trouble to apply for an affidavit through the state website. We've heard there may be some effort to eliminate that step. But you have to get a form signed and you turn it in and you're done. Now, let me be fair and say that we know that there are many folks who use that non-medical exemption because they don't have they're working two jobs. They don't have time to get their kid to the place to get a vaccination. They may live in somewhere where they have to drive a couple of hours to get their child vaccinated, because there's no physician in their county, there's no clinic in their county. Pharmacists do not administer childhood vaccines. So if you have to drive a couple of hours to do that, that throws up another hurdle. So it's 2 days before school's going to start. You don't have time to get that kiddo vaccinated. The non-medical exemption is a really easy out. So it does happen for those reasons.
Rick, a House Bill 44, which was signed into law, took effect in September, threatens to withhold Medicaid funding for doctors who don't offer vaccine exemptions for patients. So the doctor has to, what does he have to do?
Well, essentially what House Bill 44, says and does is, if you're a physician and your, office policy is that, all kiddos have to be vaccinated if they're able to be vaccinated, because there are some children and people who cannot be vaccinated because of medical reasons. If a parent chooses not to vaccinate their child or children, the physician still has to keep them in the practice. And if it's the office policy where, after a period of time, the parent's philosophy on vaccinations doesn't align with the physician's policy around vaccinations, the physician really can't dismiss that that family. And if they do, then their Medicaid reimbursement would be withheld until the physician comes into compliance. There was an amendment put on the bill, which essentially says that, okay, physician, you can have a policy in your practice that your kids have to be vaccinated, but you also have to allow for an exemption, which is highly unusual. What we're watching is and tracking is sort of what is the implementation of this going to look like, because there's no clear direction in terms of, what does an exemption form look like? How is it going to be monitored? How is it going to be enforced?
And how will it impact public health? So, Terry, what are we seeing the results of these of this dismantling of these vaccine requirements? We have seen measles outbreaks happening across the country. Polio has kind of popped up in New York. What's happening here?
Yeah, I mean, some of us have lived long enough that we saw those diseases. We know what the impact of polio was and measles, et cetera, and we trust the 100-year history of vaccine success. But for those, I think, it's important to remember that a lot of these folks who are parents today, they have no sense of those diseases. They never saw them. There's a good reason they didn't, but they didn't. And so they're not vaccinating their children. I think there's also probably a whole nother radio show, David, but, this whole loss of belief in a social compact of our community obligations to one another. So much of our society has boiled down to it's my choice,
Yeah, I call that toxic individualism.
There you go. So, I mean, if your choice is not to vaccinate your child, but everybody else in the classroom, is now going to, your child gets measles and everybody else is exposed to the measles. And what about the immunocompromised child who wasn't vaccinated for very good medical reasons? And you're going to expose that child to measles. And that's the kind of thing that's happening. And the other thing I think that to keep in mind is that, particularly as a result of the pandemic, we've got a lot more multi-generational living today. We've got grandparents and at least three generations in a household. So that child who's not vaccinated is exposing everybody else in that household, who then is going out in the community to work, to whatever. And then you've got an epidemic of measles.
So Terry, really quickly, because we're almost out of time, but what do y'all want to accomplish at the immunization partnership meeting happening in San Antonio this week?
We want people to take this day and a half that we're going to meet and walk out of there and go home and reach out to some other group, some community-based organization, some house of worship, whatever, and partner up to work on tackle one big issue that will promote better health in their community and across Texas.
And I'm thinking that this should be something people should consider when they decide who they're going to vote for in November, Terry?
I think so. I mean, we have one of the highest rates of uninsured children in Texas. We have high rates of uninsured Texans. We have a host of health-related problems in this state, and we ought to be electing people who care about that and want to address it. And I don't expect government to solve it all. That's why we're having this conference. We need to all come together to solve it.
Terry Burke, Executive Director of the Immunization Partnership. Rekha Lakshmanan is the Chief Policy Strategist for the Immunization Partnership. Thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate that.
Thank you, David.
And when we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about the Texas Supreme Court decision that ruled against women who said they need an abortion to save their lives, and the Texas Supreme Court said no. We're going to be talking about that. Stay with us.